You're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. I'm your host, Austin Meath, with WacoBusinessNews.com, and my conversation today is with the first repeat guest in Downtown Depot history. You got to give the people what they want, and that means not only bread and circuses, but more Dylan Meek. Dylan serves as general counsel for the investment firm Rydell Holdings and also represents District 4 on the Waco City Council. We already dove deep on Dylan's personal history back in our January 2017 episode, so we're going to bypass the pleasantries and jump into the highlights of what's happening and what's soon to happen here in Waco. But first, it's the word on the street. Tenfold Floral is a new design studio started by two Baylor grads who found a unique way to put their degrees to work. We caught up over a pot of tea this past week, downtown on Austin Avenue at Dichotomy.
My name is Adair McGregor, and I'm a florist at Tenfold Floral.
And I'm Ailish Lasko, also a florist at Tenfold Floral, and I also have a flower farm, Tin Cup Farm, in Buffalo, Texas.
Adair and Ailish have been arranging flowers professionally under the Tenfold moniker since November. But their inspiration started much earlier.
Yeah, Ailish and I met in college. Being art history majors, our floral style kind of tends to lean more towards, our background in art with color theory and design, and we really like kind of more natural elements. That's why our flowers that we grow in the farm tend to be ones that we prefer over ones that we find in greenhouses.
Last year, Ailish and her husband moved on to 60 acres in Buffalo, about an hour outside of Waco. She only farms on half an acre, but they're able to produce flowers not only for Tenfold, but also to sell to other florists and at the downtown Waco Farmers Market.
We have roses and we do a bunch of annuals, so like zinnias, sunflowers, cosmos. We do all types of flowers.
Ailish says that in the spring and summer, 50 to 90% of the flowers you find in Tenfold arrangements come directly from her farm, which sets them apart from the competition.
And a lot of the times they're flowers that you probably haven't seen before if you're, you know, just going to HEB or even going to the wholesale florist here.
Variety and vivacity are key ingredients of any successful arrangement, as is shortening the distance from dirt to table.
Certain colors like brides typically want to are like whites or pinks. They don't really travel very well, so to be able to grow those in a farm, it means that you're getting like really fresh ones that will last, you know, your entire event.
It's never too late to be thinking about your sweetheart. This Valentine's Day, they'll set up shop at Wildland Supply Company at 721 Washington, where they'll be tying bouquets and the proprietor, Kate Duncan, will have her typical array of snarky and heartwarming cards for purchase. Adair and Ailish's goal by year's end is to have their 2019 calendar booked with at least two weddings per month. So if you're a bride-to-be or an event planner or maybe just a person with a flower fetish, you can find them online at tenfoldfloralstudio.com. Tonight, three food trucks are setting up shop downtown in front of the historic McCullough House in support of the Historic Waco Foundation. Jill Barrow is the executive director of the foundation and joins me on Downtown Depot this morning. How are you, Jill?
I'm fine, thank you. And it's interim executive director.
That is good to know. There's been a lot of change at the Historic Waco Foundation recently. We'll get into that a little bit. But first, for our listeners, Jill, would you lay out the vision for the Historic Waco Foundation and what services you guys provide?
Basically, we are the storytellers of the history of Waco. And we have our four historic homes that are McCullough House, East Terrace, Earl Napier Kennard, and Fort House. And we have traditionally told the story of the founding of those families that lived in those homes. But we're going to make some changes. And there were people that lived in those homes not only during the late 1800s, but all the way up into the 1900s. And we can actually get more of Waco history, tell the stories of Waco history by using all of our collections, changing the collections in those houses, and interpreting all of history, not just the 1800s. So that was kind of a drawn-out way of saying that we are the storytellers of Waco's history.
That's a terrific and, I'm sure, heavy mantle for you to carry.
Well, our mission is to preserve and present the history of Waco. And so we are preserving the history by orally and also by preserving artifacts, by preserving the homes. And we're presenting the history through all of our educational programming.
So you have these beautiful homes all throughout historic downtown Waco. How do citizens get to interact with these? Do they need to call and book a tour? Can you come knock on the door? What's the best way for people to access that cool history and culture that you have?
Both of what you mentioned. Our homes are open on the weekends. We have two that are open on Saturday, two homes that are open on Saturday and two that are open on Sundays. But that's all going to change because we're going to have two of our homes, Earl Napier Kennard and East Terrace, that will be open 6 days a week. And they will have exhibits in them. They will have our normal tours, though they will be more self-guided. And then we have special things. We have our school programs. Teachers can call. We can take kiddos through. In fact, for Texas Independence Day, which is on a Friday, we're opening the homes to 4th and 7th grade, and we will have programming all about Texas Independence for 4th and 7th graders on those days. We have a lot of bus tours that come in and go to the homes. But for right now, come on the weekends. Or tonight, everyone could go to McCullough House. You know, there's so much that goes on in downtown Waco. And McCullough House tonight will be open from 6 until 9. And we hope that people will come down and see what's there.
It's going to be a super fun event. We'll have the Pokios truck there.
Yes.
We're also going to be having food provided by the Mad Hasher. Not provided necessarily. They will be there if you want to come and buy delicious tacos. But we got dinner and dessert parked right in front of a historic home at 407 Columbus, at the corner of Columbus and 4th Street. What inside of the McCullough home? What will people see? They'll get to walk inside, see members from the Historic Waco Foundation, get to learn a little bit about the McCullough family.
Well, not only the McCullough family, but the Caldwell family, because the McCullough house actually started off as a two-room cabin. And you had a family of seven living in that two-room cabin, which was pretty phenomenal. And then when the McCulloughs bought the house, they expanded it to build the adjacent two-story structure. And so you will learn all about those two families. You will learn about the artifacts that are in there. You will learn about the connection that those families had to Waco and how they impacted the history of Waco. And the best part about it is it's all free tonight.
So tonight at the McCullough House, it's at 407 Columbus. I know the Mad Hasher has done a lot of work with Rio Brazos Catering, who owns the Mad Hasher truck, done a lot of work with the Historic Waco Foundation before. I love historic preservation and want to make sure that the community knows about the terrific work you guys are doing. So we're so happy to have those dinner and dessert trucks there tonight from 6 to 9 at the McCullough House. Jill, thank you so much for coming on and talking a little bit about that.
Thank you.
Dylan Meek is a partner at the investment firm Rydell Holdings and the city councilman for District 4. He's now on Downtown Depot for the second time. Welcome back.
Love to be back. My favorite program.
We've already been through a lot of the personal stuff with you, but for listeners who maybe didn't hear the January episode, can you give me a 30-second overview of who you are and why you're in Waco?
Sure. My name is Dylan Meek. I am a dad and a husband. My wife, Lindsay, is staying at home with our kiddo who's 14 months old. Her name's Mabry. And we have another one on the way coming due in July. So just a little bit after you, man. And I'm in Waco because I love the city and fell in love with the city after landing a job for a local law firm after graduating from Baylor Law School. And am a, like you mentioned, at a local investment firm here in town. I camp out mostly in our real estate office doing mostly real estate investments, and also I'm on the Waco City Council and spend my time doing all of the aforementioned, being a dad, a husband, councilman, and business dude. So, yeah.
Dylan, I really appreciate you making time for us here on the radio. I'd love to jump back to 2017 as a year and hit some of those highlights and hear your thoughts on them. Since the last time you were here in studio, Fixer Upper has gone off the air. There have been wailing and gnashing of teeth, wondering what's going to happen with Waco now that Fixer Upper isn't airing fresh episodes every week. What are your takes on the exit of new Fixer Upper episodes and what that holds for Waco as a tourist destination and as an economy?
Sure. So a couple of high-level thoughts. First of all, so grateful for the Gaines family and the Magnolia team and all they've done for our community. I think our image will be forever improved because of who they are and what they represent and just the excellence and quality of work that they did on that show and what they've done in their other projects since then. So I think everyone in this town owes a debt of gratitude to that family and that company. I think that if I had to lay a bet, if I was a betting man, my bet would be that they're not going to get out of the public eye. I don't know that. I don't have any intel or inside information on
they're
that.
They're too loved. You can't go to HEB and walk down the magazine rack and not see Chip and Joanna on People or Us Weekly or whatever it is. It's crazy.
So who knows what their future holds? It's not for me to say, and I don't know, but I don't think they're going to leave the public eye, but I could be wrong about that. I would say, though, about the Waco economy, a couple of things. One is I'm probably equally as interested in how the Texas economy is, and particularly how the DFW, Austin, and San Antonio economies are continuing to grow. Waco finds itself, I think, in a really interesting place from a geographic perspective, being on I-35, the main street of Texas. And I think that by having our central location, and as DFW and as Austin continue to grow, and their economies continue to thrive, it's our ability to gain. And that's from a variety of reasons, including the fact that I think Waco is going to be an attractive alternative to people who want a more affordable life, while still maintaining a high quality of life. And I think that there's a couple of things, like, you know, DFW and Austin are continuing to become expensive and congested, and the culture of those cities are defined. And if you were to look at other cities that were the size of Waco in the state right now, I think Waco's in a unique juncture because, no disrespect to those cities, but Waco's experiencing a lot of momentum and growth. And part of it's because of its geographic location, but then there's a lot of other reasons for that, including the national image that we've obtained through Fixer Upper, but also because of a hardworking, dedicated group of people who have been working in the trenches for a lot of years to make our downtown and other parts of our community successful and thriving. So I really think that as the Texas economy grows, Waco is going to continue to grow, just given mostly its geographic location, the breadth of post-high school education opportunities in Waco, from TSDC to MCC, Tech and Tarleton. You can get a four-year degree at Texas Tech or Tarleton at MCC's campus now, and then Baylor. When you have that level of educational opportunities, and then the culture that comes from having higher ed like that, there is a lot of puzzle pieces on the table that I'm really optimistic about pulling together. And I think if you're able to be strategic too, if the leadership of this community continues to work with the level of strategy they're working with right now, then I think that we can expect success.
Well, we've already started to see some of that spillover that you were talking about in between Dallas and Austin, as evidenced by the announcement that the Ironman Triathlon will be happening here in Waco. Is something that Will Phipps, who's the director of the Greater Waco Sports Commission, and many others have helped sort of filch this event from Austin, roll out the red carpet for them in Waco, show, hey, even though we are smaller, these are the ways in which we can offer a better experience than you've had prior.
Yep, that's right. And I think that other cities, as they grow naturally, it's not a knock on them, but as there's greater opportunities and different issues that are facing those cities that used to be able to roll out the red carpet for businesses that are moving into those communities and or events like Ironman, they don't have the capacity for that anymore, and that's certainly something Waco can do and say, hey, we're going to make this the best event you've ever seen, and we're excited about it because, frankly, the return on our investment as a city from those tourism dollars justify our doing that. And so in addition to it being a really cool thing. So I'm excited about that level of initiative from the leadership of the community. And then also when you look at things like Creative Waco and the Greater Waco Sports Commission and Campus Town Waco and Prosper Waco and all of the missions of those organizations, each one of those four things I listed is a strategic approach to addressing an issue in our community that we haven't taken before. There hasn't been an initiative that is dedicated to the retention of college graduates in Waco that will in turn raise our median income and grow our economy. And Campus Town's addressing that. And that's the same goes for the goals of Creative Waco and the Sports Commission, Prosper Waco's addressment of poverty.
And a big new initiative that's addressing that and will be fitting in that same conversation is what Chris Collins mentioned a few episodes ago, the efforts now of Startup Waco.
That's right.
Startup Waco is a new entrepreneurial push that's bringing a lot of what were once disparate people and industries together. So you've got Greg Lehman from the Baylor Launch Program, Kevin Renwall working with 1 Million Cups, and you've got a ton of voices from the city, yep, from the chamber, Tate Christensen, and what they're trying to do to organize not just a place for entrepreneurs to gather, but a place to have mentorship and access to capital, mm-hmm, really is the gateway to having higher wages in, yep, our city.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the quickest ways to look at raising our median income is by making sure entrepreneurs have clear pathways to be successful. And that, what I love about Startup Waco is that the goal of that initiative is to help the florist and help the barber all the way to the 3D tech, 3D printing tech startup. I mean, the full spectrum of entrepreneurs is able to be benefited from this initiative. And I think that that's, to your point, you're exactly right. We're going to grow as a community if we're able to be strategic about achieving our goals. And one of our goals needs to be becoming an entrepreneurially friendly city, and I'm excited about Startup Waco working towards that end.
The TIF board has hired a Denver-based economic and planning systems company to assess what's happening in the greater downtown area. They recently released a few findings, some of which are that their findings that Waco needs a full-service hotel, a major arts attraction, high-end office developments, and continued housing growth.
Mm-hmm.
This was released just a couple weeks ago. J.B. Smith of the Waco Trib put it together, and it really does lay out a vision for the thriving metropolis that Greater Waco could be. What do you make of their findings?
Yeah, I don't think that there was any finding that was shocking to anyone who's super in the weeds. I think that most of the folks who are eat, sleeping, and breathing the growth of this community found those to be, yeah, like I said, probably not a shock, but it's just great to have some data put behind it and some expertise. And it's going to be really great for us to be able to focus our efforts when we're looking at the TIF. I mean, the TIF needs to prioritize how it's going to spend its dollars. And so this definitely allows those that to be done for us to be able to say, hey, yeah, this is going to be this is how we're going to prioritize the allocation and the spending of those dollars. But in terms of the need, I think I could – it's absolutely true. I mean, when we're looking at getting businesses to stay here, grow here, and or relocate here, we want to be able to say, hey, here's a world-class facility for you. Here's a class A beautiful office suite that is available to you. Even in terms of downtown success, we want it to be a regional hub. I think that you have to acknowledge that we need folks from every small city in McLennan County and the counties bordering McLennan County to find downtown Waco to be a desirable destination. And in order to do that, you need attractions, and art attractions need to be present. I think Fiona Bond – I met with Fiona Bond yesterday in discussing how do we start laying the groundwork for potentially having a performing arts center. Lubbock just did a performing arts center. It was the funds for that center were raised by private donations. At the same time, I think the city only contributed the land that it was built on, and all the other dollars were raised privately. And I think that that's a great model for us to say, if Lubbock can do it, we need to be able to do the same and have those sort of attractions occurring in downtown, from visual arts to performing arts. And be able to say, if you're within 45 minutes of downtown Waco, you know you're going to be on Friday night. You're going to drive in to this part of the city and hang out here because there's going to be something for everybody.
There are a number of city initiatives that are in the works right now. Can't think of anyone better to come on here and discuss this than Dylan Meeks, city councilman for District 4, a local attorney. Will you give us updates on two big projects we've talked about on Downtown Depot? One, the riverfront development update, and secondly, what's happening with Heritage Square?
Sure, would love to. So let's start with the riverfront. And there's two riverfront projects in the works, and I'm going to talk about the one that's on city-owned land that we did an RFP on a couple years ago. We have run into hiccups on the cleanup or the environmental state of the of that property. TCEQ is doing its due diligence and its homework and revealing that historically and going back, I think, probably 100 years, there was some cleanup necessary on that land. But the good news is
– Well, and you knew that was happening.
That's
there
correct.
Were, what, $8 million dedicated from TIF
yep.
for environmental cleanup.
That's right. So the good news is – we expect a clean bill of health issued this month and expect to have a development agreement in place in March. And so the big reason – the reason we don't have the development agreement is because we were waiting to get that clean bill from TCEQ, and I expect to get that. I expect that we'll have that this month. And if we can have the development agreement in place in March, then that's going to open the doors immediately to start having a public process and a public discussion on redoing the streetscape of University Parks Drive from I-35 to Franklin and the farmers market and the future of the farmers market fitting into this development.
And I've had conversations with Paris Rutherford of Catalyst from the get-go when mm-hmm. they were first engaging with the city, and it's always been of primary import in the way that Paris has designed the master plan to make sure that the farmers market is not just retained but is highlighted.
That's right. Yeah, I think that the farmers market is a great success story for driving traffic to downtown. And look, our downtown needs as many initiatives like the farmers market as we can get in that it brings people that wouldn't otherwise be coming into downtown. And once they're there, they're going to do other things there. And so for downtown to be successful, we need initiatives like that. I'm a personal big fan of the farmers market. My wife's an even bigger fan. And so really excited about its future. I think that Paris recognizes that in the same way downtown benefits from the farmers market and will continue to do so, his development will. There's a large number of folks who come to the farmers market every Saturday, and if they're coming to the farmers market, they'll probably camp out at other parts of his development. So he knows that, and I think that the farmers market's future is very bright.
Well, and especially with the plan that Paris has drawn up to
Correct.
Bring density and to bring housing
yep.
there. Right now, the way that they've projected it is to have three-story urban mixed-use buildings bringing 476 apartments. They will be, in addition to that, live workspaces, mm-hmm. spots for retail, adequate parking. So you really, as someone who loves the farmers market and wants to see it thrive, mm-hmm. are raising those odds when you have 500 people who
That's
live
right.
within 100 feet of it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a both and. I think that there's going to be people who are drawn to live there because they know that there's activities like the farmers market going on in the pocket park that exist on site. And I think that there's also going to be vendors at the farmers market who are sure happy that there's that density located near their farmers market.
So let's head a little bit more into the core of downtown
sure.
and discuss the Heritage Square project.
Yep. So right now, there continues to be discussions with the Civic Center. We're having discussions on getting access with them to get access to the site for them to do some testing on the site to further determine what their structure will be. I know that they met with some of the stakeholders on the City Center Waco board recently to discuss what aesthetic and quality they would be using for their building materials, as well as the Heritage Square component themselves. One of the things that Civic Center has talked about at length has been their utilization of public spaces and creating beautiful public spaces. And they are continuing to get public input on what exactly that could be so they can roll that out with a little more specificity to the council as the development agreement begins to take shape.
There's a few infrastructure projects that are being discussed right now. One is the BRT to increase bus rapid transit all throughout the town.
Yep.
Where are we on the BRT?
Yeah, so to back up a little bit and say the BRT, the bus rapid transit system, would basically create a backbone line that would reduce any any commute on public transportation by at least half the amount of time, usually more than that. Right now, it's difficult for anyone to justify, in my opinion, using our city transportation system because of the amount of time it takes to get from one end of the town to the other. But having a backbone line that is going to run basically that will parallel Franklin or run on Franklin back and forth and with even some cool features like timed lights to make sure that the commute time is reduced as much as possible. With circular lines that connect to this backbone line, I think it's going to be a real positive thing for the folks who use public transportation, and I think it's going to actually grow the numbers of people that use public transportation. So I'm excited about this getting rolled out. The good news is there's a federal grant that's in place that is probably going to come to fruition, limiting the amount of city contribution, and also greatly impacting and benefiting our city economy. So right now we had a presentation at the end or the beginning of January at City Council on this and are moving forward with applying for that grant. Because we're in the application process now, we're going to have to wait and see whether or not we're awarded the grant. But if we are, we'll likely proceed. And in conjunction with that, there'll probably be discussions on whether or not to make Franklin and Washington two-way.
Because that was my next question.
So that is the cool thing about this is that because the BRT will run along Franklin, there was a recommendation from the consultant in conjunction with the BRT, to make Franklin and Washington two-way. What would have to happen if it remained one way is that the backbone line would have to run down Franklin and then come back onto Washington.
Okay.
Which wouldn't be they were very candid and said it wouldn't be a huge setback, but if you're planning on making this two-way, this would be a good time to do it. The cool thing is you can use the grant dollars for that conversion and putting infrastructure into place to make the Franklin and Washington streets, or at least Franklin, which will be a part of the BRT two-way.
We've got 60 seconds here, Dylan. Want to close with right now, there's a new show on the Paramount Network called Waco, the 25th anniversary of the Branch Davidian story out there in Mount Carmel. What do you, as a city council person in the city trying to control this conversation, what do you make of this in 30 seconds?
Yeah, oh man, 30 seconds, come on. So I haven't seen the show yet. I've heard it's interesting, and I definitely want to tune in and watch it. I think that at the city level and where we're talking and what we're talking about right now is how do we make sure that the message of Waco is being communicated in the midst of this 25th year anniversary. And I think that message is a story of resilience. We're a resilient town who has been branded and identified, like it or not, with what happened 25 years ago in this region. And regardless of that, Waco's thriving. Our economy's growing. People are deciding to move and relocate here, and the people that have been here forever are experiencing significant success. And so for me, my primary goal in having this conversation, among other things, but my primary goal is that the story of Waco's resiliency, growth, and success will be communicated in the midst of this 25th year anniversary.
Dylan Meek, always stepping up with his back against a wall. Thank you for addressing that and for coming on Downtown Depot and talking.
Love it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Dylan, Adair and Ailish of Tenfold Floral, and Jill Barrow of the Historic Waco Foundation. Learn more about their work and stories from Old Waco tonight at the McCullough House from 6 to 9 p.m. Follow Waco Business News on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and catch us back here on KWBU on Friday, February 16th at 11:30 a.m. for another conversation with a dynamic city leader. I'm Austin Meek with WacoBusinessNews.com, and you've been listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.